are we on television today? Careful today what I say. Thank you to Honorable Abrasini. Honorable members, sorry for having to adjust the time. Some of the committee members had to attend a meeting that was quite urgent, and I was requested to postpone the time. Having considered the request, I thought it appropriate to do so. I've also been requested not to proceed beyond quarter to 12. It may be that we might finish earlier, depends on the honourable members. I've also, under the circumstances, agreed it seems to be a compelling argument. Some of the members that have to catch flight, if they don't catch a particular flight, they are going to be stranded in Cape Town for the whole weekend. So I have conceded to that. Maybe on the next occasion it won't happen, but I think today. Are you objecting, Honourable Member? You want to differ with me because I see you raising your hand. I have apologies here from the Honourable Kutsi. He did also in the meeting at some stage, one of the meetings, say that he has to take his wife to hospital. The Honourable Sonto is busy on oversight. The Honourable Jacobus is still having problems with the operation she had on her eyes. And the Honourable Diale had a family member passed away and has gone home to attend to that. I don't think there are any other apologies, Honourable Members. Those are the ones that have been forwarded to me. Before I proceed, Honourable Abrasini, do you want to be heard now?
No, I just want to clarify. I appreciate that the ANC wants to join in my filibustering, but this is not really the time yet, quite yet. We'll do it later.
Honourable Swart.
Just a question, are we sticking to our program as agreed upon? Because I think according to that, there was a proposed plenary on the 24th. I stand on a correction that this might be debated on the 24th. Is it envisaged that that will change? Thank you.
Honourable Landers.
Chairperson, I think perhaps this is the opportune moment for us to put forward what we, sitting here as ANC members, have decided. I was planning on asking you for an opportunity perhaps later in the committee, but now that Steve Swart raises it, as a study group we've given very careful consideration to the process that we've been following. And after some debate within our study group, we've come to the conclusion that the deadline of the 24th is inadequate. And so we want to propose that the committee approach the powers that be to request an extension of the life of this ad hoc committee. We don't have a fixed date. That's the difficulty, but we're looking at something like the second week of the next term. So in other words, we go to recess, and when we return 2 weeks into that third term, or thereabouts, that specific date can be ascertained by yourself, Chairperson, perhaps in consultation with those powers that be.
This is, I take it, a follow-up on
Chair, we welcome that suggestion. I think the process that we're going along now, the deliberations, have been very useful, and I think it is in the best interest that the date is extended. Possibly one can look at that date just make sure we do the extension properly with a proper resolution before the House, so that it will enable us to properly deliberate on the issues and improve the bill as we're going along. So we, from our side, support the proposal. Thank you, Chair.
And the Honourable Dean Smith.
Thank you, sir. I think it goes without saying that we support the proposal. It was our position earlier. You will remember that we need a year for this law. The Honourable Landers himself at one point suggested a year would be appropriate. So we support even this extension, but we do ask you, is this even too short, Chair? Because presumably you're not thinking of sitting in July. We have certain justice matters that we have to attend to in the recess. And if it's only 2 weeks into August, how many weeks have we left now before we break? It's not a lot of time. You wouldn't want to take your extension further to avoid having to do this repetitively.
Honourable members, I'm hearing what you're saying. Can I just get some clarity? Is these agreements that you're coming to, is it on an understanding that you would also want to meet on a few occasions during the recess?
Yeah, Chair, I don't know whether, as I said, the powers that be will be amenable to that proposal. You see, what a lot of people, both in the media, I say this with the highest regard and respect for them, choose to ignore, is that a lot of us serve as full members of other portfolio committees. I myself chair portfolio committees. And so finding the time to consider this very important piece of legislation becomes extremely difficult. I've had to go to the point, Chairperson, of saying to you, this is my Justice Portfolio Committee program. Please, whatever you do, don't schedule meetings that will clash with those meetings. And I'm grateful to you, Chair, that you've conceded to that. So that has been our difficulty. People seem to think that we have all the time in the world to attend to just the Protection of State Information Law. That is not true. All the members on this ad hoc committee have other responsibilities that are perhaps even more important than this one. You can debate that with me if you like, but that is my personal view. And it is with that in mind, Chairperson, given the difficulties you've had logistically and otherwise of trying to schedule meetings in such a way that the ad hoc committee has adequate time and space to give to the members to apply their minds to the very complex and complicated issues that arise from this bill, we believe that serious consideration be given to asking the powers that be to look at giving us, at the minimum, the barest minimum, 2 full days during the recess for us to sit and look at the Protection of State Information Bill. Thank you.
And the Honourable Swartz.
Yeah, I want to support what my colleague has said. For me, it's even more difficult. This morning we had Constitutional Review, Finance, and this committee at running at the same time. Next week, Tuesday, for example, we've got Justice, we've got meetings here, we've got plenaries in the afternoon, we've got the EPC debates, Justice debate, Finance debates in the afternoon. So we are very thinly stretched, and it's been very difficult for me to even participate in the EPCs to give this committee proper due, which to me I'm prioritizing. So I would fully support that we in fact sit less next week if possible, being a very busy week, and try to catch up the day or two that we lose at a suitable time. But I've just got one caveat, and that is we already have certain commitments already in the constituency. Maybe we can talk as to, are you suggesting in the constituency period maybe we can find a time later or something that suits us, because clearly we've already set programs for that we would need to adjust accordingly. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, the first consideration is there is an obligation on us as members of parliament to finish this legislation. I understand the proposal coming from the Honourable Landers is meant to accommodate a whole range of problems that we have been facing. But I think you should not see this now as a proposal that is meant to slow the process down whereby we can now go and relax and at some stage in the future start picking up where we were. I don't think that is what the Honourable Landers is saying. We have still got an obligation as legislatures to come to a conclusion on this thing, however we do it. I think we are trying, and what the Honourable Landers is suggesting is that more time is needed. And I think if the committee will allow me to redraft the programme, to speak to the necessary authorities here and to see what type of a program they will approve. But it seems quite clear that we're going to have to sit in the recess because I am going to be asked just, you know, what type of time are you looking for, what. And then there's also the question how much time the officials or the powers are going to want to give. You understand, the powers are the ones that would also like to see that at some stage or another the life of the ad hoc committee comes to end. It's most unusual that an ad hoc committee should exist for such a long time. So if it's okay with the honourable members, that I be allowed to do a redraft of a programme, also talk and negotiate with the powers, and come back with a draft programme to the next meeting that for approval. That is okay. Honourable Dinsma. Romania and then Honourable Abrasini.
Thank you, Chair. We obviously support the extension of the life of the committee so that we can properly deliberate on the bill. The question of meeting during the recess, we do have commitments and obligations in the recess, and I, for one, will not be available for much of the recess other than in the last period of the recess. This is something you might consider in drawing up your program.
When you say the last period on Romania, what are you referring to?
I'll check the diary and confer with you, but it would be in the very last period of the last week.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suggest that you give us a deadline to share with you our diaries and so that we can make plans about the recess. I think we are in agreement. I also serve on a task force which is dealing with the intellectual property amendment bill, and we are also planning to meet during the recess so if consideration could be given to avoid the coincidence of those meetings with these meetings as well would be much appreciated. With trade and industry. I know. Listen, when you work for John Fabs, at times you feel you are in a military structure.
Honourable members, then is it so that I shall negotiate with the powers and see what time period you can look at and how to reschedule the program on the 14th month.
May I just ask you, sir, why you use the expression the powers? I mean, we are the legislative authority, and the people who organize this place are I didn't want to say the word servants, but I mean, we must say we need so much time to do a law, and that's it. Who are these powers who, I mean, look, clearly there is at work a kind of a Vavi effect, as my colleague described it. But I don't care what goes on in the powers outside these halls. We are the MPs, and if we need so much time, we indicate to the programming whipping committee that that's what we need. It's not clear to me who the powers are that you have to persuade. But the speaker is there for us. He organizes this place. He's not our boss. He's our esteemed... No, no. Yes, but it's a programming function, understand. It's not a... Let's not now have a fight.
Honourable Member, I use the word powers because I thought it would encapsulate everything that needs to be done. There's more than one person that needs to be consulted. You must understand that over and above what the ad hoc committee, it does not mean that the ad hoc committee must exist forever. So it does become a problem within the parliamentary system when an ad hoc committee is continuing its work, and that is what we're trying to resolve. Parliament has a program of its own. You don't just come and say, look, you know, on a particular day when there are questions to the president, you take that out of Parliament's program, and because the ad hoc committee has got its own problems and they would like to sit on that day. So there is a parliamentary program. There are so many committees here. We are not the only committee making demands on the authorities or the powers that you're complaining about for extra time to be included into the parliamentary program. So you must also understand it becomes a terribly difficult. There are committee rooms. We struggle to get rooms in which to meet. So all this, I thought by saying powers, you would understand that it's not just the speaker. There's many, many people that have to. And hence, it's not just walking. It's a proper application that you have to. You have to motivate it. You have to... Yes, there's somebody that understands the process now. So, honourable members, I think you only want to hear the end product. Let's not the detail. I think the detail is going to bore you. Is it then okay, honourable members, I come back to you with a draft program and you'll have the final say on the draft program. And that will be at the next meeting. Honourable members, then I think let's get on to the work for the day. We had tossed the staff of the Chief State Law Advisor to do some necessary alterations that we had approved. Can we go over then to them to take us through that? I have a document now in front of me, which is working document number 8. It's dated the 3rd of June. Is there any honourable member that does not have a copy of that? Because I think that is the document they will be talking to. And I would again urge the honourable members to keep these documents. Honourable Smuts, is this meeting that you are having there? It's a private meeting. Are you chairing that meeting, Wayne? Please.
I am chair. But I will desist from doing so. Clarify.
Honourable members, I see you're all very happy. I don't know why. What is it that has made you so happy? Can I hand over to the staff of this Chief State Law Advisor to take us through this document? I was telling you and urging you to keep these documents because you make your marks on these documents, and when there is a concern or if there's a dispute, you are able to refer back to this document. Each document for the day's work will be a different document. I've asked that they print the wording on both sides so that you don't have too bulky a document. You will also have the benefit of every time you're getting this document, you will have all the alterations that have been agreed upon incorporated already. So as we go along and as we come to the end, the last document would have all the alterations that was agreed upon. Can I then hand over to the Chief Law Advisors?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the members and the visitors as well. The amendments that were effected, that was agreed upon, and we were instructed to do besides those that you have already alluded to, Chairperson, which are the corrections, is on page 32 of the document. We added a sub clause 10 as agreed last time, and we have made some changes because that provision is referring to a delegation which is in sub clause 2, and it is placed right at the end now. So the reference, we have made changes to read like, the head of an organ of state retains accountability for any decision taken in terms of a delegated authority contemplated in subsection 2. So if the committee agrees on the slight changes, we will effect it as such. And on page 33, paragraph I, it was agreed that it should read as follows: classification decisions. For the purposes of classification decision must be guided by section 21 and the following. Classification decision must balance openness against secrecy, taking into account the following factors. And paragraph 4, there were slight changes there, which raised as follows: the value of the information adversaries of the Republic. And on page 35, there was a instruction that we change sub clause 4 to read, subject to subsection 5, the agency is responsible for the handling of classified records and the declassification of such records of a defunct organ of state or agency that has no successor in function. And we also effected on page 36 an amendment to clause 21. By inserting in line 3, or could reasonably be expected to, and the next line we omit significant end. And that clause will read as follows: in taking a decision whether or not to continue the classification of information, the head of an organ of state must consider whether the disclassification of classified information is likely or could reasonably be expected to cause demonstrable harm to the national security of the Republic. That was all that was agreed on that meeting, and we were instructed to effect those changes. Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Honourable members, those are the proposals that we had, or the instructions that we had given. Is there any difference of opinion on this? There seems to be none. And can we proceed then to the next business, honourable members? I remind the honourable members that clause 20 remains flagged. I'm not sure what is the DA's position on clause 19, because there was agreement that adjustment be made to, which we just heard, subject to subsection 5, which was added.
Period. I think that's why we decided. There was some debate, but
that's clause 20. Yeah. That was still flagged. And then clause 19.2 is flagged as far as I've got it marked.
And it's the subsection 6 that we are opposed to. So that we can have a last look at it before we vote on it.
And I have clause 18 also marked as flagged. That is the one where if you get the classified information in whichever way, that you don't run to the press, that you in fact follow the law, and you go to the South African police, or you go to the agency and you hand over the document to them. We don't have that consensus on that issue, so clause 18 is also flagged. I don't know how much more debate you want on that. We have heard a whole range of arguments on that. I'm just concerned that we flag too many things. The Honourable Dean's ones.
Sir, I suggest that you leave it. I mean, when we deliberate, our thinking matures, and it's not as though there's a point at which you close off all argument and no further wisdom can be gleaned from discussion. So we would ask you not to remove 18 on the assumption that you will vote it in and we remain apart. So just keep it there until we deal with the very, very difficult question of all of the offences and the difficult issue of the minimum sentencing. So just leave it until we get to that discussion, I would implore you. And likewise with 19, it's that final subsection which to us is one of the constitutional problems. The fact that you are classifying whole blocks of information without observing the principle of severability. So that on that one, you know, it's a constitutional problem to us. So again, I think leave the final debate to the final debate. Don't close it off.
Blebacini, then the argumentum.
Sorry. Now, ideologically, I'm opposed to this type of provision which impose on the citizen to do the work of the state and become subsidiary policemen. But if you do want to have this provision, which I don't think is the type of thing that you should do, I mean, if somebody loses a dog or a piece of classified information, it's the owner who needs to fetch it. But if you do, then technically, please do consider the amendment that we suggested, which is the addition of knowing that such record is classified. I think because it ties to an offense, it is important to be clear. the requirement is for him to be in possession and to know that it was lawfully communicated. But there is no explicit requirement for him to know that it is a classified document, and it should be so.
The Honorable Mentor. Just hold it on the Mentor. There is a point of order. Yes, Honorable Mentor? Yeah. Chairperson, is it not the procedure that we continue from where we have ended, unless if there is someone who has got a specific area that we have already dealt with, suggesting to the committee to go to that area for purposes of either consolidating or whatever. But for us to move from where we have ended and go back to areas that have been flagged, I don't think it is a procedure, Chairperson. It is going to eat more time for us because we will try to debate again the very same way that we engaged before they were even flagged. Yes, you are correct, Honourable Member. I was just wanting to make sure, because we are going to move on, what it is that is really flagged to prevent the concern that you're in fact raising now, so that when we come back, that we don't get to debate the whole watching, because what we pick up, what you hear now from what the Honourable Dean Smuts is saying, that under Clause 19, the only subsection 6 is the issue that has been flagged. So we just wanted to get clarity in terms of Clause 18. The whole Clause 18 is flagged, and yes, the Honourable Ambrosini is now raising something that he has raised before. But I just wanted to get clear. It's the whole clause. We're not going to debate it now. And Clause 20, there was a concern raised by the Honourable Dean Smuts about the 20-year period on the archives. So the whole Clause 20 remains flagged. Sorry about that, I don't remember. You can, I'd like to hear you now.
I understand that we are flagging that Clause 19 and 20 are will remain flagged. And just want assurance from you that we are not drafting assigned as done and concluded.
It is the subsection 16 on which we don't have consensus.
Yes.
The others, there is agreement.
Oh, great.
No problem on the others, and that's why I just want to be sure that we don't open that debate again unless there is compelling reasons why we should. So that I just wanted the Honourable Members to also to mark in your records there. So, Honourable Members, I think we at last were busy with this Section 21. If I'm correct, and I was trying to explain my understanding of Clause 21, it seems that the position of the DA was that it should be retained, except for F. Which they wanted, subsection F, I think it's 2F, which they wanted removed. The Honourable Ambrosini has been arguing for some time that the whole clause must be deleted. And if it doesn't, if it's not to be deleted, I think the Honourable Ambrosini's argument was that we don't create a different standard in Clause 19 in respect of continued classification that differed from the grounds for which classification was agreed upon. I think I need to draw the Honourable Member's attention first to something that exists in the drafting. Originally in the drafting, we were relying on national interests as sort of your core concept on which you would be classifying. There was the concern that it was too broad. And hence there was also now the concern where you were setting the standards on which you would look at the three categories of classifications, top secret, secret, and confidential. There was an additional concern there which was related to the national interest, that the test there was far too loose. Now, we have dealt with that. We have removed national interest and restricted the thing to national security. We have also now made the test in which you are to use whether this information needs to be classified in these categories. We've made that test a stronger one. And this clause now is relating to the old version of the bill. You understand? This is relating to national interest. And it was meant to give some substance, some understanding of what national interest was supposed to be. But we have now adopted the clause of national security. If you continue to retain this, you are now taking half of the lion, and you've got some cat's feet here now. It's a lion running with cat's feet. So what I had proposed earlier is that all that you need to do is synchronize this particular section with the classifying section. And I think that is what the Honourable Abrasini was arguing for, because then you do not create a contradiction. If you start trying to create a test here now that is different from the one that allows you to classify, you run that danger now of getting the thing unbalanced. I think I recognize the Honourable Landers first, then the Honourable Swartz, and then the Honourable Dean Smuts.
Yes, Chipperson, you see, what this clause 21 seeks to deal with is provided in the heading, continued classification of information. And the argument put forward is that what is contained in this clause is not what is contained in the clause that deals with the actual classification of information. But perhaps what Mr. Abrasini has omitted to point out, and I assume this is because of his filibustering, and hopefully that we wouldn't see it, is what is contained in subclause 3 of this clause. What does subclause 3 say? The minister may, after taking into consideration all aspects as indicated, we need to look at what as indicated means in subsection 2 of this clause, section 11 and section 17(1), Roman 1, authorize the classification or declassification of any category or class of classified information. Now what does section 11 deal with? Section 11 sets out the nature of classified information. Section 17(1)(1) deals with classification levels. Okay. No. It's been renumbered. So national interest is out. National interest is out. I'm dealing with it as it is in this working document. So if my numbers are incorrect, that's why I try to refer to the headings. The clause that deals with nature of classified information, whatever that clause is what is provided for here. The clause that deals with classification levels in sub 3 of this clause is what is provided for here. So what does the minister do when he looks at the continued classification of information? He looks at what is in this clause 21, and it's clearly set out here, as well as what is in the clause dealing with the nature of classified information and the clause dealing with the classification levels.
The Honourable Swartzworth and then the Honourable Dean Smart and then the Honourable Abrasin.
Chair, thank you. And you recall that I wanted to re-look at this issue as we concluded previously to see if there was substance to Mr. Ambrosini's argument of the tying up of the two clauses, 15 and 21. I hear what Mr. Land is saying. It is an important point to sub 3, but section 11, as the bill is proposed, is the reference to national interest. So I think we need to understand it in that context as well. Maybe it is. But what is significant for me is 17.1 that ties in classification decisions. Your first classification decision must be guided by the section 21. So it's tied up. So there is a link there. I still share the concerns of with F about the financial loss, and that's a separate issue. But once we, but just dealing with there is a tying up there with the continued classification. 17.1 refers specifically to the guidance of section 21, and I think that assists in considering that.
Point of order, I thought if we had agreed at our last meeting, come out. So, well, we did agree. Okay. You know, yes, we did. There, in your working document, it's the Honourable Dean Smart.
Chair, I think that you are very right in diagnosing the fact that this bill was, that we're dealing with, was based on the national interest as one of, no, shake your head. Because that is why certain clauses look the way they do. And that is what the chairman, I'm taking the chairman's point and the chairman's argument because he's right. And I wonder whether they didn't write this clause, the one about the continued classification of information, precisely because, as the chairman says, they realized how wide the national interest is. The reference in sub 3 is to the national interest. Look at the bill as published. The reference there is to the national interest. And I wonder if the chairman isn't right in thinking that it's because the national interest was so vague and motherhood and apple pie, that when it came to continued classification, which, remember, is a serious thing, if our principle is transparency and openness, then it's bad enough to classify in the first place, but it's particularly problematic from the point of view of openness to then continue a classification. And I wonder whether this particular clause wasn't written the way it is to cater for that, that your criteria become almost more stringent. You deal now with actual examples of the kinds of things that ought to be classified, and they are precisely the right kinds of examples, the confidential sources, the law enforcement investigative method. And because I think that is right, as you have repeated, Chair, we are very keen not to lose this section because it deals with exactly the sort of thing that should be classified. We were also happy because this clause knits backwards right into clause 15, the levels of classification. When you classify in the first place, you have also got to remember the conditions in 17 and these considerations in 21. We just didn't want to lose it, that's all. However, if we're all on the same page, we are sympathetic to Steve Swart's proposal, and it was his, that we should bring these into line with the Section 15 criteria. And we're perfectly sympathetic to that, and we'll spend some time looking at how we can do it. But one possible way, through you, Ted, to Steve, one possible way would be quite simply to bring in the levels of harm as they exist in 15 and build them into those examples in 21. So where we talk about the degrees of harm, I'm not looking at the original, that doesn't help me, but the demonstrable harm which rises to serious which rises to irreparable. If we build those into these examples, then the way they knit together will be immediately apparent. So I think that's an exercise worth doing. We are therefore sympathetic to a better integration of this section with the standards in 15. And it's just a matter of finding how to do that. But I think the chairman is exactly right that it's because this bill originally rested on national interest that this kind of thing has happened, and we must just mend it, cure it.
Honourable Abdusin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, through you, Mr. Chairman, to the Honourable Landers, now stop ascribing intentions. I'm not filibustering. When I start filibustering, you will find out, and it's going to be a different thing. I'm trying to help to make this the best possible bill, because if you give me a public interest defense, a public domain defense, and we transform the power to regulate to the power to issue guidelines on the side of the minister, I'll sign on this bill. So I want it to be a good bill, and I hope we get there. So I'm not filibustering. So the difficulties I put to you all, it's in earnest. If I'm wrong again, just give me the answer. I may be as stupid as the ordinary judge, or perhaps more stupid, but I need to understand what it is. So let's look at three. Three doesn't answer the question. First of all, the power to classify, it's in each and every organ of state. Here is the Minister of Intelligence. This ties with seven. In seven, the minister can identify entire classes and categories. Here, there is a repetition. This relates to categories and classes of classified information. It's an entire thing. And that's the same power he has in terms of Section 7 to issue regulations where he can identify entire subject matters. So, three is not a qualifier of one and two. It's a different provision. It's a power given to the minister. One and two apply to everyone. Now, the difficulty with one and two is that it doesn't tell you from which moment it applies. It tells you that in order to be continued to be classified. So you classify something at 10 o'clock in the morning. At 10:01, this provision kicks in. To remain classified at 10:02, that classification made at 10 o'clock in the morning must comply with this, because in order to be continued to be classified. Now, we've got three provisions, and just place yourself, if you would, in the seat of the chap who is classifying, and he needs to make a decision. He has got Section 15, which gives him some tastes. One in respect of national security, one in respect of international matters. These are the two tastes on three categories. Then he needs to go to Section 17, in which he looks at the conditions for the classifications. So obviously, for the conditions for classifications. So he will need to satisfy himself that not only has he made 15, but has also made 17. And he will also need to satisfy himself that he has made the condition for continuous classification, because there's no point of classifying if it needs to be declassified immediately. And these tests just do not match. And they have, because each law needs to be construed and interpreted holistically, they have a bouncing effect in juxtaposition on the interpretation of the other clauses. Let me give you an example, over and above the one I've just given, but I'd like you to look at this from the point of view of somebody. In 15, you've got the test of not damaging the relationship of the Republic with foreign countries in three different gradings, but that's basically the subject matter. Here you got the same reference, but It deals with violating a treaty or international agreement or an agreement between South African government and other government or international institution. I would be tempted to utilize this test here to understand what it is that, in terms of 15, damages the Republic, prejudices the Republic, and I will reach the conclusion that unless there is a violation of an agreement, there is no prejudice to the Republic. Question to you all, is that what you want? If it is that what you want, take it out of here, put it in 15. Next issue, the harm to national security. Under D, is on the 2D must be serious. Now, there is no requirement of serious.
Something that you have argued before. No, but yes, but I've heard this before. Haven't you said this before? I don't want to stop you.
No, no.
Because you don't know what I'm saying.
I was going to enter into a sentence which indeed would be the first sentence which I've used before. You're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. And I'm flattered that you do remember everything I say.
Don't interfere with my intelligence, please, okay? Don't try and make a fool of me.
No, I'm not trying to.
I say that the sentence that you are saying is something you repeated. I'm talking about the argument. I'm not trying to stop you from proceeding. I just want to know, is there anything different in this argument? Because your argument, the way I understand it, is that you run the risk of having different standards if you retain this clause. Because you've already agreed on 15 that there should be. Is that the argument?
Well, first of all, Mr. Chairman, there is no, forgive me, I think we are acting here, been a long time, with a degree of informality. There is no intention on my side to make a fool of you. I have repeatedly expressed my respect and admiration. You have been conducting these proceedings in an exemplary manner. So forgive me if there is a touch of familiarity on my side. I will refrain. You see, it's not one argument. I started with a question, which is a real question, it's not a rhetorical question. What do we expect the classifying official to do? What process do we envisage him to take through all these three provisions? And yes, it is an issue of reconciling, but that's the first question. The second question is, if these tests are not the same, which one in your mind is the higher test, the higher threshold? Because it would seem to me that all considered, the criteria for the classification plays a much lower threshold, which ties with what Dean said, it was public interest before, and therefore we make sure there is a low, there was a general test, broad-based test, and it made sense to have a very lower threshold to the classifying. But this seems to me a lower threshold, all considered. So, is my understanding correct? And how would you suggest one reconcile these differences?
The Honourable Mentor.
Try and understand, Honourable Ankosini, but in your interactions with him, he has clarified for me what exactly his issues of concern are. So I will listen to how we flow and then see if we address his questions. I was struggling to follow his argument, but I now have followed it.
Honourable Landers?
I must congratulate Comrade Fekir because I've really struggled, and Mr. Ambrosini must forgive me when I say that it's not meant as a slight to him, it's just that my intellect is a lot slower minus different chair, if I may, which is in addition to the points raised by Mr. Ambrosini. Throughout the bill, Chairperson, and here I may just take you back to 19.2 says the following. The head of an organized state is the declassification authority. Somewhere else in the bill, it says the head of state is the classification authority. Now we have 21, particularly specifically 21.3, which says the minister, after taking into consideration all aspects indicated in etc., may authorize the classification or declassification. I think there we may have a difficulty. It doesn't seem to be consistent and logical. We say, on one hand, the head of the organ of state is the classification authority, and the head of state is the declassification authority. And then we come here and say the minister may authorize the classification or declassification. So that's my difficulty with this, Chair, and I really think we need to re-look this particular subject. Thank you.
Honourable members, the point that the Honourable Abrosini is making is that this clause is different. In fact, it's got nothing to do with the rest of 21. And if he is correct, then what we have here is appeal or a hidden review process. It's actually coming down to some type of review now, the subsection that you're raising on Columbus, where the minister now is. And that's got nothing to do with what the earlier subsections are saying, except that under the headings it might seem that it's okay because he's also going to consider whether the classification should continue. So under the heading, it might have been stuck under the heading because it seems more appropriate there because the heading deals with continued classification. But as whether it's related to the rest, it seems not to be related to the rest. The other point I want to make, Honourable Members, I've raised what I've raised earlier on, not because I think I'm right. I've raised it so that you can consider, Honourable Smuts, it was merely to generate a debate on what I thought. You need to take into account when you start trying to analyse this thing. It's not that I put these things on the table because I am wanting to be right. It could well be that I am right in the end. But it's more to generate a debate because it might be something that you haven't considered yet. Honourable Abrosini?
Yes, if I may, through you, Mr. Chairman, direct the attention of the Honourable Landers to clause 7. Sub 1, sub A. And I think that there the issue of the coordination of 21.3 arises. The minister has the power to determine broad categories and subcategories of information. This is by means of regulations. So here it tells everyone by virtual classification, these subject matters, you classify them. Now, under 3, again, it refers to category or class of classified information, so not the single one. And here it tells you that it can declassify. But the difficulty is that under 7, it does it by regulation. And under 3, it does it by administrative decision. So I think that there is where the coordination is to come in.
Well, however we do it, I mean, I tend to agree with you, Chair. I think 3 where it is inappropriate. If
Mr. Emerson is correct, and I will need to think about it. It sounds feasible. Then there has to be a link to the president's power to prescribe those categories of information. What 3 is not talking about prescribing categories. 3 is saying he authorizes the classification or declassification, which is totally different. Throughout the bill, we have said the head of an organ of state is the classification authority and the declassification authority. And suddenly, out of the blue, we are saying the minister may authorize the classification or declassification. And quite clearly, that doesn't ring consistently. If we are referring to the minister's powers to prescribe the broad categories, that's something else. Then let us find a way of saying what we're saying in 3 so that it matches what is in the present clause 7.1. But right now, it's inappropriately placed where it is, in my personal interest.
The Honourable Mentor first.
Yeah, for me, subject 3.
You call it green light flickering there.
Given
me
the green light. For me, 3, Chair, I don't think that we I think the question we need to also ask is whether 3 is really contradicting, as we are submitting what was said earlier on in terms of who bears the responsibility for classifying and declassifying. For me, 21 deals with a continued classification. So if initially whoever has the responsibility, which was granted earlier on, head of organ of state to classify it, there would be a time limit in terms of expired of classification. So the classification will automatically fall off after the time period. Should there be a necessity for continued declassification when that time lapses, then my interpretation of 3 is that it is then the minister who should deal with the responsibility to determine whether that lapse, the time lapse, should be continued. So I don't know if it's me that is being confused or if we are confusing ourselves unnecessarily. Maybe, Chair, I don't know, we must hear out the drafter whether what we are saying, what we are struggling with, is making sense to them. Maybe we need to ask them to.
If I may follow up on the last question where the Honourable Landers left it, it seems to me that the real question becomes what do we want to achieve? So if we step back from the text, we got the power of the minister to prescribe the categories, which I don't think should be prescribed, should be by guidelines, but whatever. But I think that if anything here, what we would want is a general power of the minister to request specific information, surely to be declassified, because at the end, if he says there is no interest, it's the final depository of national interest. If it's fine with him, surely to be declassified and possibly to be classified. So that they can intervene, because that's the only meaning I can have in this section 3. But my first reading, because of those considerations, was that of deleting it. But if the minister operates within the checks and balances and the belt and braces, then it would stand to reason that if he takes into account 15, if he stands into account 17 and this section, if you were to remain, then he can very well request, not authorize, but request an organ of state to classify something that the organ of state in its own decision has decided not to. Well, the word request, administrative law implies the duty of the receiving part to comply. But again, it is not nice because it places the minister in a position of poking his finger or nose in all other departments. And it very often this is the camel nose in the tent. Where the camel nose in the tent? Do you know the story?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, the camel nose in the desert is cold and says, can I stick my nose in the tent to be warm? And the guy said, yes, just stick your nose in. And the morning after, the camel is in the tent and the guy's been pushed out. So that's the camel's nose in the tent. It's a point of entry and then it expands.
Honorable members, we need to go forward on this thing now. The issue is in our power to deal with. I don't have any objections if people want to go up and look. But the reference to national interest in subsection 3 of this clause, and whether subsection 3 is related to the rest of section 21 or whether it's different. I think if it is different, we should put it where it belongs, provided we understand what it's trying to say. That then leaves us whether this particular 21 has been properly captured, and the point that the Honourable Abrasini has made, that we are creating possibly a different standard here, the one that we have used to classify. Now, Honourable Members, is this something that you want to think about more?
No.
So let's flag 20. I think what the Honourable Members need to look at is this. Are we trying to create an additional obligation here on the classifying authority to be conscious of the fact that it might become necessary for him to consider whether that information that he has classified needs to be continued to be classified? Because then we need to put it in the form of an obligation. And it should then be very simple by just referring to section 15, to say when those criteria no longer exist, there's an obligation on you to look at what you need to do, because you either need to declassify completely or you need to lower the classification or higher the classification. But think about that so that when you come back, that is perhaps something you can enlighten us on what you are. So, Honourable Members, can you kindly flag Clause 21? There are issues in Clause 21 that have been agreed to. You would have seen that today. The adjustment to 21, subsection 1. Am I correct, Honourable Members? The rest of the clause, including subsection 2 and 3, is then flagged. Can we briefly then go on to where we were at the last meeting? I think there was a question of this proposal from the ANC that we consider creating a classification review panel to deal with reviews. So I take it the Honourable Members from the Opposition has had an opportunity to peruse the document that was handed to you, the Honourable Abrasini.
And there is a point of order. I think that at least I would be much better prepared in discussing the ANC proposal having had the benefit of completed the analysis of 22, mm-hmm. And possibly 23, because that's about reviewing information, the classification. And 22 and 23 will give us the, even 24 will give us the statutory parameters. And so my suggestion is that we first do 22 and 23 and then we look at the ANC proposal.
If I understand the Honourable Dean Smuts now, they are wanting to look at the question of status review.
No review by virtue of a law, the classification lapses, then some of the flaws that I personally detect in the NC proposal would be greatly mitigated. If you don't do it, then you need to ask the question of what happens. And whenever there is an obligation of do, there must be a sanction if you don't. And 22 doesn't address this. You must review it, what happens if you don't. It could be drawn as a judicial concept, jurisprudential consequence. The court looks at that, it's not been reviewed, and therefore it's declassified. But I would like to have that explicitly said, because then also create the urgency in the relevant officials to stamp the document again with a new date, which is all that is required. One stamp, one date confirmed. 5.5 seconds.
Chairperson, unfortunately now I have to go into what is contained in our proposal, because it seeks to address some of the concerns raised by Mr. Ambrosini. But let me say right at the upfront that perhaps we need to consider providing a sanction or a penalty for failure or refusal to review, because that's not the issue. What is there is that, in terms of our proposal, the panel must conduct an own volition, the application of the classification manual, receive all reports of 10-year reviews, receive once a year, annually, all reviews of classified information conducted by Organ of State during the course of the year. And then it goes on to set procedures and rules. So on. So clearly we've not applied our minds to what happens in the event that the State Security Agency, for example, fails or refuses to review a particular piece of classified information. We would need to think about that. We haven't gone into that ourselves. Our proposal then goes further, Chair, that this must be referred to its findings, the panel's findings, must be referred to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence annually or as and when required. Is that sufficient? I don't know. We can apply our minds to that. Okay. So we've not given any thought to whether the 10-year period should be less. We think this is more than adequate. The panel does that annual review in addition. So there's that constant check and balance. But perhaps we should hear the other members.
Chair, I presume that this is an opportunity to advance some views on the ANC's proposal for the panel, is that correct? Just 3 points. The first difficulty, it's clear that the ANC's intention or proposal is that the panel be independent, and that is contained in your draft clause 21. However, if you look at your draft clause 23, there seems to be a conflict, because the proposal is that the panel be appointed by the minister. And I would argue that because of that, the panel then would not be independent. That, I think, is the first issue which we need to apply our minds to. The second issue is that the panel would report its findings to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. The
nothing wrong with that, other than the fact that, of course, the Joint Standing Committee meets routinely behind closed doors. And the question would then arise, well, would there be access to those findings? That's a second issue that I think needs to be looked at. And then, of course, linked to that issue is the fact that there's no provision that there ought to be a formal report to Parliament. So I think those are three issues that we need to look into, Chair.
Will I proceed?
I feel a little on. Why am I green?
Yeah, that's a single green. Okay, sorry. Now, I feel a little uncomfortable speaking after the Honourable Mayor because I'm going to sound like the bad guy here, but I need to share with you all my reading of this document, because if it is incorrect, my reading can be corrected, and that's what we're here for. And I don't never read a label. So I wish to disregard the label like independent and review. And let's look at what this thing really does. Mm-hmm. The first thing that it does, it conducts the application of the classification manual contemplated in section 13.4. Now, translating that into intelligible language, I think it wants to say that it supervises the implementation, because conduct the application is not clear, supervise the implementation of the classification manual. Now, the section is not 13.4, it would be 15.4. And 15.4 of your proposal, the NC's proposal, save for the fact that you've taken that out. In your original 15.4, there was provision for a manual. There is no longer. So that's the first thing that this thing, the manual, would emerge. So it needs to be clarified what the manual is, over and above the regulations that the minister needs to issue in terms of 7.1 and 7.2, and the regulation that the minister has the power of issuing in terms of one of the last provisions, 50-something. So you've got two sets of regulations, and then there is this thing's manual. So what these guys do, they make sure that the manual, which will look something like the MIS, possibly better drafted, is implemented by all the organs of state. It's not a new model. The KBG used to do the same, the STASI used to do the same, and they will have, because they're implementing a law, an intelligence liaison officer there where it needs to be implemented, because you can't go there and implement it yourself. You need to have a guy who gets tasked in each department. As it is now, there is a person responsible for the MIS in each department. Even in Parliament, we have got a MIS official, and the MIS requires that. So this is the conduit where all these intelligence liaison officers in each department go back to the person who are in charge of ensuring it. So this, ensuring compliance with the manual. So these are the inspectors general in the structure. It's the super spook club. Then receives reports, which include the on the 10-year review, which is one item. But it's a loaded item, because what really means is, what have you got, what should you classify, what you shouldn't classify. And in so doing, they have the capacity of reaching in each and every organ of state. Because in order to receive the report, they must request the report, they must verify the report. Then see, they receive once a year all the reviews of the classified information. Then, under two, they can make rules. Now this gets really confusing because you've got the regulations under 7, the regulations under 50 something, 48, then you got the manual under A, and now you've got the rules, all of which apply over and above what we are legislating here. Then they, obviously under 22A, they can interact with each organs of state, head of organs of state, which implies that the power to call for meetings, asking them questions, holding them accountable, information to be supplied with the report committee, they can ask what's going on and what they're doing. They're very pervasive. In order to get this information, they must have the corresponding power to ask the question. That's very pervasive. Information to be supplied means they can ask for information. And this goes on. So that's what they can do. Now, who are they? They are people handpicked by the minister with no involvement of parliament, handpicked without any qualification of sort as compared to what we're used to. I mean, they must be citizens, that's fine. Then they must be committed to the purpose and principle enunciated by the Act. I mean, whatever that means, obviously they are. I mean, and they be available to work full time. No, not even the standard. I mean, in my 17 years of reading legislation here, I've never seen an establishment clause where there are no standards for this qualification, there are no standards for qualification, there is nothing about vacancies, there is nothing about remuneration. So it's all really for the minister to decide. These are the trusted people of the minister. Appointed with suitable qualification and experience in a field where nobody knows what people they actually do and what they're required to do. I mean, do I have suitable qualification and experience? No, it's really in the eyes of the beholder. So it is not something that helps the cause of transparency. It's a consolidation of the power of the minister in implementing the act. So I would put this not on the side of something that answers the concerns raised in this committee, but rather on the side of that which compounds and increases those concerns.
Now, I think this is extremely useful because in the course of discussing your very good proposal, the intention is that we'll get greater light. May I just say that in your thinking, Honourable Landa, through you, Chair, is Dr. Ambrosini correct in thinking that this would be almost a full-time body? Because I assume that that's not what you intended. However, one would have to look at the volume of what they are actually going to be hit with. If we're dealing with 1,001 institutions, you have to think, are they going to end up like the Human Rights Commission, which we all know they have no room to file paper files that they receive annually under the player. They literally can't store them. So we need in due course to establish whether we're talking about a... I think you have in mind only a body which will meet from time to time to conduct these reviews, and they will be people who have other jobs, right? And Mr. Mayer's point stands, though. You know, if independence is really what you want, and it is certainly desirable, and the decisions of these people must have some sort of binding effect also, by the way, otherwise, what are they, reviewers of reviews? But if we want to make them independent, you can take several models. We can do the appointment by Parliament, and you take it out of the hands of the Minister. You can do the appointment by an ad hoc committee of Parliament proportionally composed, the way we do the Chapter 9. That's one way. Alternatively, or in addition, and that sometimes works well, you can stipulate which existing office bearers would be the right people to compose your panel. For example, the Rica judge, we have proposed that the Rica judge, as you remember, should be the appeal body in the case of applications for classified information. You have not so far been sympathetic to that, but I still think it's completely brilliant. It comes from somebody else, not from myself or Mr. Mania. But think about it. Now, what about composing a panel which consists of the same man, the Rica judge? He is the judge to whom you apply when you want to intercept somebody's phone calls or wiretap, and he is precisely an expert in security matters, because that is what he does. And you should have a look at the Rica Act, perhaps, which I have here and I could read for you. But he's one possibility. Then, on your description, you want people with suitable qualifications or experience in law and must have an understanding of national security and related matters. Huh? Yeah. But I would go beyond that and stipulate the specific office bearers, but I think we should also look for someone with an expertise not only in the national security, but someone with a proven commitment to transparency and openness, free speech, whatever. The way we write the SABC board appointments, those candidates have to have shown a commitment to, in their case, free speech, etc. But I think that there is a real case for balancing here your security expert with someone with a proven track record of commitment to the other things, so that you achieve that same balance which we have just introduced in that one subsection. Maybe a human rights commissioner, you know, in the case of the appointment mechanism for the IEC, which is, that's the chapter 9 that works the best, because that appointment mechanism has two levels. In addition to parliament appointing, we inserted there a little prior panel consisting of the Chief Justice, someone from the Human Rights Commission, the Public Protector, and someone from the Gender Commission. They predetermined incumbents of other posts which are suitable. So you could do something similar here. Get someone from the Human Rights Commission. Get someone from Advocate Madonsela's office, if not herself. And then you have your predetermined composition. You are going to end up then with a body of believable, independent-minded people. And we could think of two more to fill your number of five, because five seems good. And so the minister then doesn't get to hand-pick. The minister should also, of course, not be able to fire them. But so those are some thoughts, Chair.
Members, I have a long list here, and I did indicate that we would adjourn early. I still have the Honourable Landers, I have the Honourable Swart, I have the Honourable Mentor, and the Honourable Ambrosini. Yes, Honourable.
Don't forget our agreement that we will be closing the business at court, which is now.
I've just raised that now, honourable members.
We've taken note of my apologies to Steve Swart. We've taken note of the points and concerns raised by all three honourable members. I've no doubt that Steve Swart has his own list. We'd like to hear them. I've noted them here. And I'm in a position to respond now. But given your earlier ruling, shouldn't we agree to adjourn and then take up this very important discussion at our next meeting? If the members don't object. It's not that we're saying we're not interested, we're done with you. Far from it. We
honourable mentor, is there something that needs to be heard now? Given what has just been said.
So I agree with Comrade Landers, but I would like us to hear out Honourable Smart so that when we go away with a package of responses, not having them out one.
Is it short? Honourable Swart, let's hear you.
Thank you. Very, very briefly, I share the sentiment on my... This is a step in the right direction. I definitely. I just wanted to ask under the exact power of this function needs to be set out a bit more, because it says here the panel 22.1c receives reviews. Surely it's going to conduct that, it's going to do something, it's going to do the reviews, it's going to do the appeals. So we need to put the verb strong. It's not just going to be a reporting body, it's going to actually be doing body, and we need to look at what it's exactly going to do. Then just the constitution of the panel, clearly one needs to have a transparent process to appoint credible and independent people, whether it is via the standing committee or parliament to a recommendation to the minister. That is something that one could look into. The second issue raised by Dean about the members and balancing it with the commitment to openness and transparency, we'd agree. What I had said, there's openness and transparency, and even someone that also is knowledgeable in the access to information principles, because that's the balance that you're going to have to strike with that law, with the prior law. I think that would be useful. Even what about a human rights commissioner that deals with that? So that's something to... And then lastly, just C, be available to fulfill his role. Those type of things you can put in regulations, be available, the constitution, all that's just the small detail. But all in all, I think it is a step in the right direction. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, I would like you now also to consider, because the process becomes quite complex, there are these reviews and appeal procedures. And I propose that you consider restructuring this into a special section so that you don't confuse the public with what you're trying to do here. You see, these are special reviews and not the reviews that one normally would understand as a lawyer. So the way the thing is now, it's just in clauses. It's not in a particular section. It just follows, you know, clause 21 is following clause 22. But I think you need to structure the question of appeals and reviews under a specific section. Perhaps so that when we talk about reviews, and we need to also keep in mind what it is we're trying to do here. I think we want to take the minister out of the process here. Because the way the thing is structured at the moment, the minister was going to be involved, and later on he becomes involved in appeals too. So I think you need to just, when you go back, think about what you are wanting here, look at incorporating that so that the argument can flow into that issue too, because you don't want to finalize this thing and then later on come by appeal and find out that you've closed something here which actually needs to be open. Because so, honourable members, I'm not taking any further questions. We had an agreement, we will adjourn, and the session is now adjourned.
one.